This past summer, music fans marked the 25th anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley, the major pop idol of the second half of the 20th century. But this year is also the 25th anniversary of the death of the major pop idol of the first half of the 20th century. Harriet Baskis has this profile of Bing Crosby, who died on this day in 1977.
Though the 25th anniversary of Elvis Presley's death got plenty of press during a slow news summer, Bing Crosby biographer Gary Giddens says it was Crosby who made it possible for Presley to hit it big.
No Bing, no Elvis. Bing really invented the vernacular style of popular American singing.
Dinah, is there anyone finer in the state of Carolina? If there is, and you know her, show her to me.
And says Giddens, it was Bing Crosby's singing on records and after September 2nd, 1931, on network radio that first made audiences go wild.
Because he had a very sensual style, he had a beautiful, very masculine baritone voice. It was a very erotic effect that he produced, and so people swooned when they heard him, and women especially wrote, you know, countless letters to CBS the first time he went on the radio.
Here is the moment you have been waiting for. The delayed appearance of that sensational baritone, Bing Crosby, whose singing has made him the favorite of California, through the mediums of the motion pictures, the vaudeville stage, and the radio.
Just one more chance to prove it's you alone I care for. Each night I say a little prayer for. Just one more chance.
He had an absolutely hypnotic voice.
Actress Catherine Crosby was married to Bing Crosby for the last 20 years of his life.
There was a lady named Orma who used to get on a bus because he'd sing Come to Me, and she would get on a bus and come to him and turn up on his doorstep in Beverly Hills.
Come to me, my melancholy baby. Cuddle up and don't be blue.
No matter what he sang, Bing Crosby's voice was unmistakable. By the mid-1940s, he was one of the world's most popular entertainers. He starred in 55 feature films, including White Christmas, and a series of popular road movies with Bob Hope.
First you sell me for $200, then I'm going to marry the princess, then you cut in on me. Then we're carried off by a desert sheik. Now we're going to have our heads chopped off.
I know all that.
Yeah, but the people who came in the middle of the picture don't.
You mean they missed my song?
Crosby was so popular that his name is on 3 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He achieved all of this, says Catherine Crosby, despite what Paramount Studios considered to be some physical handicaps.
He had the double handicap of being balding and having ears that stuck out. When he was signed at Paramount, they glued his ears back. That was itchy and it was uncomfortable, and sometimes right in the middle of a take, because initially the lights were very bright, an ear would pop out. And once in the middle of a movie, he said, that's it. They're just staying the way they are. And the studio gave in on that. But his makeup man, Wally Westmore, said, Bing, you cannot be a balding, wingy star.
So Crosby agreed to be fitted for an assortment of toupees to use while on the job.
Bing always referred to them as scalp doilies. He just hated them.
And, says Gary Giddens, Crosby would do everything he could to avoid wearing them.
In fact, when he got a script to do a movie, the first thing he would do was count all the exterior scenes, because in the exterior scenes he could wear a hat. He saw it as just a very silly movie convention and was very, very candid about the toupee.
When I get up each morning, there's nothing to breathe but air. When I look in the mirror, there's nothing to comb but hair. When I sit down to breakfast, why do you laugh?
Crosby's thinning hair might have been no secret in Hollywood, but as Gary Giddens discovered, it was news to the folks at Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington, which houses the world's largest collection of Bing Crosby memorabilia.
Crosby was a graduate of Gonzaga, so he had been sending boxes and boxes of stuff for decades, and nobody had ever actually gone through it all. So there was one box which had two, looked like dead hamster skins, and I looked at them and I said, my God, they're toupees.
Rather than offend the Crosby family, the library put the toupees away in the special collections vault,
which is temperature and humidity controlled, and it's closed to the public. And watch your step up here. It goes uphill.
On a tour of the vault, Stephanie Edwards-Plowman, Gonzaga's special collection librarian, points out shelves of film scripts, master discs of Crosby's radio programs, fan magazines, and other Crosby collectibles.
The Bing Crosby travel valise. This is BC for his initials, and then we have his pajamas with Bing on the pocket.
The pajamas are stored a little wrinkled inside the suitcase, but most fans who make their way to Spokane are much more interested in seeing Crosby's golf hat, his 23 gold records, and his many awards, including the one from the National Donut Dunking Association, declaring Crosby the radio star whose face was most conducive to dunking. And while these Bing things may be interesting to see, on the 25th anniversary of Crosby's death, fans will probably watch one of his movies, listen to his music, or just think a bit about the entertainer who described himself in an interview with Barbara Walters just 5 months before his death as, all in all, a pretty regular guy.
If you were writing a book and it said Bing Crosby, and then you had to do a couple of lines afterwards to describe this guy in show business, what would you say?
Well, I'd say he sang a fair song, in tune most of the time, that he could read lines pretty good, had a good sense of comedy timing, fair vocabulary, and not a bad fellow all around. That's about it.
Bing Crosby died near Madrid, Spain on October 14, 1977, after completing a round of golf. Next month, Hofstra University in New York will host a conference dedicated to Bing Crosby and American culture. For NPR News, I'm Harriet Baskis.